that was just his.
Oh, that might be under its life.
So rolling cart, is that what we're using?
Yeah, that's on wheels.
Wow. There are 235 mil projectors in the booth back there. The two little windows.
Oh, really? Nice.
I love it when a plan works. Unless you're really used to it.
Really?
I hate doing it.
There always some people show up, but I don't know how to handle that.
You know. So you're good here, so this
we're
is...
We're okay. How do I get to the next slide?
Or I'll use the arrow to click space bar. There's various ways of doing it. You could... who killed the light? Oh, that was you, Brendan? Okay.
Yeah.
On the Crestron, you probably got more flexible control over the lighting if you wanted to tweak the lighting a bit.
Yeah.
Home.
Probably on here.
Light controls. So around 75. See what that does.
Light time will have to play here.
Maybe 50. See what 50 does.
Slide? Oh, you just transferred the two?
Yeah, it's on the desktop there, so you don't have to worry about it.
Cool. The blackboard that you keep them on.
It's
kind of.
I'm not
going to
show it.
No. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Are we
having
to do it on
this one?
You want to show this one?
Or
you can do it on this one.
We can maybe just
load up the page.
And then you can just click all tabs.
Yep. You got it. So you're load up the page if you want to see it. Because that one you can't be adapted on. That's why I got mine. I don't see the people sitting down here, but for the audience, it's better.
Perfect, okay.
But you can see that they prefer money. So.
Perfect, okay. Here we're from 11:15 to 12:30. We'll start off two panels, one with students, one with professors, 20 minutes each. We wrap up with AUS and the dean. And that's it.
Okay.
200 students should be here. We'll see.
Okay. Great.
It's better for the screen, but hard to see the people sitting down here, you know, so I prefer it up.
You know, it's easy to be up here, you're awake, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's good.
Yeah.
Let me see.
So I'm standing here about a foot and a half away. Check, see how high you can go up before we get feedback. Hey, that's, whoop, just there, a little bit of ringing.
Yeah.
Check, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm 2 feet away. You shouldn't really be 2 feet away from this thing, but, and if you get closer, of course, it's, check, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's not bad, so you can move around a little bit and still be heard. It doesn't have to be booming. It's pretty good. It's all where you put the speakers. No, I wouldn't have. That's why I don't know. But what I would do is I'd turn it off for now.
Yeah.
Unless somebody wants to use it.
Okay.
So this is the.
Mic one.
We're 504. They have the round table for people who want to.
So do you want us to
I just put an asterisk on the run sheet where I'm actually making
Good morning, everyone. Hi. Hello. Thank you for coming, and thank you for coming to the faculty orientation portion of CSI. My name is Nellie Verduras, and I'm a faculty advisor from Arts Oasis. And I have Jacob Greenspan. I just mix up his name all the time. That's why he needed to remind me. And we're going to be emceeing the event today. Actually, I'm just going to do a bit of an introduction, explain to you the role of Arts Oasis, and then Jacob really is going to take over. Really, the purpose of this session today is really just give you a glimpse about the BA experience that you're going to have. We're going to talk about the flexibility that the BA degree has and just introduce you to all the other possibilities that you can get. So we're going to talk about Arts Oasis and then talk about the classroom experience and what you can bring into outside, like the academic opportunities, like study away, internships, field study courses, taking a course elsewhere. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Dawson Hall. Does anybody know? Has anybody gone yet to Dawson Hall? Okay, I see 1, 2, 3 hands. That is one of the most important buildings on campus. It's located right next to the Arts Building. The Arts Building, I'm sure everybody knows, it's the main building on campus, right? It's that old building with the flag on top. If you're coming from McGill College, straight up, you see it? Dawson Hall is located right next to it on the right-hand side. That's where Arts Oasis is housed. We have a lot of information at this center. When you enter it, you'll see a counter. You'll see the staff that's working there, and they'll be able to answer all your questions. In some cases, in peak periods, there's lineups. And what we have is peer advisors, and we call them the ASAPs, which stands for the Art Student Advising Program, that are there to triage the lines when you're there. So they'll be able to find out if you're at the right place. Sometimes you always go to Dawson Hall. That's usually the first point. However, you might be at the wrong place. You may need to go to Service Point, or you may need to go to the Brown Building to use some of the services there. So there will be someone to direct you to the right place. If you're at Dawson Hall at the right place, then someone at the counter will help you. If not, in that case, you might be able to see one of us, the faculty advisors, during their drop-in hours. Just want to make sure I get this right. Okay, Arts Oasis, the office. We all know it's located at Dawson Hall, and the advising. In the Faculty of Arts, we have three types of advisors. We have the faculty advisors, and that's something I do, and we're located at Dawson Hall. Our job is really to help you through your transition from CGIP to the time you graduate. It's our roles to support you, to encourage you, so you can be challenged and use all the resources available on campus. It's our job to introduce you to all the tools that you need. Another part of our job is to refer you to departmental advisors. And departmental advisors is probably what you're going to see as well, coming from CGIP, and they're the ones that explain to you the programs. In most cases, they're professors. Some departments have professional advisors, like in psychology and art history. And their job is really to explain to you what you need to take for your major, for your honors, the difference between the major and the honors, the pros of doing the honors, the advantages. In some cases, as well, later on, when you get to know your departmental advisor, their role changes as well. They become more mentors because you know them now. They can talk to you about grad school and everything else. You know, now, another type of advising that we have, and that's one of my favorite advising, is peer advising, the ASAPs. I just talked about them. We have an example here of Jacob, Roma, and Kathy. They actually were responsible for orientation, but there's also peer advisors that work in our office. And they've been selected because they understand the student experience, and they generally want to help students. And they work at Dawson Hall. They answer phone calls. They answer chats. We're on chat, emails, and they work at the counter just to help you with all the information that you need. Student experience at Oasis. As you all know, in the faculty, we advise art students. And you're all sitting here in a different room, and your transcript, your student record, is going to reflect who you are. you might be sitting next to each other and you're all thinking about majoring in poli sci, for example. The possibilities are high. I'm sure there's two or three students that are sitting together saying, I'm going to major in poli sci. Well, the flexibility in the arts degree is that it gives you opportunities maybe to change your mind. You know, you want to take an elective in something else, and it might introduce you to another discipline. All your records is going to be reflect, your student record is going to reflect your experience. It's going to be different from everybody else. It's your story. Being from CEGIP, a lot of us live in Montreal. We're all going to have jobs working here. It might be a good idea to start off with only four courses as opposed to five, right? Five, you're still considered full-time with four courses, just to balance it. You know, so you might be going to be making plans. You're not sure what you're going to study, so just be open to changing these plans. Information. There's a lot of information in that in arts, a lot of rules and regulations. I can stay here and talk to you about every single rule. It's just going to go in one ear and go out the other. That blue piece of paper that we handed out explains to you certain websites that we're pointing out. The one that I really think you should be using is the BA degree planning, degree planning. It explains to you all the definitions, like what is a required course, what is an elective course. It explains the multi-track system, right? That in order to graduate, you need to have at least two programs on your record, at least a major and a minor, right? And they need to be in different academic units, different departments. It explains to you what the SU is, Courses Outside Arts and Science. So remember to use these websites for the information, or you can come to Dawson Hall. Services. I'm going to link to... Thank you. Arts Oasis. So we all know Oasis. If you Google Oasis McGill, it'll get you to this website. Everything you need to know for advising. It has our mission statement that we talked about in the beginning. It talks about our contact information. You can use our chat line. It's open from 10 to 4. Our telephone is right there. You could always call us. It's going to be the peer advisors that are going to answer the phone call. You can come in and see us during our drop-in hours, 10 to 3. The counter's open 10 to 3. Or you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, which is monitored by the peer advisors as well. We have a list of all the faculty advisors, that's us, and we have a list of all the departmental advisors who you're going to be seeing that will be able to help you with your courses. Later on in the afternoon, I believe around 2 o'clock, you're all going to go to the AUS lounge where there's going to be a lot of information on your departments. So I really recommend that you go. You'll be able to speak to a representative there. It'd be a good idea. Another website that I want to point out that's on our announcements, again, is the BA one. Oh, there it is. Planning your BA degree. Link into that. It explains everything you need to know about rules and regulations. Another, I think, and just to remember Oasis for advising. You go on the website and all the information's there. Thank you. I would like to introduce you to Jacob, who's going to take over and introduce the panelists.
Thank you, Nelly. Okay, so right now we have a special treat for you. We have a panel of professors who are here, and they're going to talk a little bit about their research and explain some of the value of studying for a BA degree. So we have Professor Hudson Meadwell from the Department of Political Science, Dr. Lucy Nalock from Social Work, and she's as well our Associate Dean of Student Affairs. We have Professor Maggie Kilgore from the English Literature Department, and Professor Philip Oxhorn from the Political Science Department. So put your hands together. Thank you. And I can please ask to hold your questions till the end, and we'll have a short question and answer session.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm Hudson Meadwell from Political Science, and it's great to see you all here. You know, I'm going to be very quick. I'll give you 4 or 5 minutes of what I think you can take away from a BA. Just a couple of things about myself. I'm from Northwestern Ontario. I did my BA at the University of Manitoba quite a few years ago. I've been at McGill for 26 years, and I teach at all levels from intro to graduate students. So let me say a few things about life in the Faculty of Arts and life after the Faculty of Arts once you've completed your BA. I want to echo one thing that Nellie said. The Faculty of Arts is a big house. It's tremendously varied offerings in terms of courses. And I think it's one thing that you should appreciate when you're thinking about doing a degree in arts. You get to specialize, but you get to do a wide range of other kinds of things. And, you know, you're here in large part not just because of your intelligence, but because you're curious. And curious people will find very interesting things to explore in the various parts of the Faculty of Arts. So that's one thing that I'd like to emphasize to you, that it is a place with many things to explore. The second thing I'd emphasize about the experience is what you'll leave with. You're going to leave with a set of skills that is unique in terms of what university students are equipped with as they leave. You'll have abilities in analysis, abilities in interpretation. You'll find as well that you'll leave with writing skills. You will have a set of skills that are quite general and that are very adaptable as you move forward. So, you know, keep that in mind, that what you will leave with, and this is an important part of the value of the BA, is demonstrated critical abilities in terms of writing and writing, really, and thinking. And these are the kinds of things that will make you adaptable to many different kinds of positions as you go forward. And they're skills that employers appreciate, because it will show one thing important, that you will have the skills to adapt and to grow and to learn as you go forward. So while you're here, take advantage of the variety. Look for things outside of the classroom. Look for internships, programs away, exchange programs. Look for opportunities to work with the professors. And all of that will prepare you, I think, very effectively for life after the BA at McGill. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Maggie Kilgore in the Department of English. I'm always worried about these things. Okay, I guess it's okay. I don't need to be as close. Oh, it's wireless. Okay. Oh, I can. There, yay, okay. All right, this is much better. This is fun. Okay, so I teach in the Department of English, where I work mostly on Renaissance literature, although I also teach a little bit of classics and translation, and I don't work in just English literature, although that's my area of specialization. I'm also interested in other literatures of the time. And I teach this material because I love it. I think it's just amazing stuff. But I also like teaching it very much because of the challenge in teaching older materials in today's world, where one of the benchmarks of appreciation of things has to do with relevance. And of course, there's often a kind of assumption that, you know, anything that's very distant from us in the past is too far for us to relate to. And I like overcoming that challenge and showing just how important and how much these works speak to us today. And I think this is also an important issue, of course, for students in the humanities generally, where we're often asked to justify, you know, sort of the importance of what we do. I teach a variety of things, but at the center of my work is the poet John Milton from the 17th century, who most of you will know, I hope, as the author of the great late epic Paradise Lost, a work of astonishing poetry, which tells the story of Adam and Eve from the book of Genesis. Now, this may not seem to many of you like a promising subject for a poem, or most, perhaps the most gripping one or relevant today. But it's an amazing work, which has one of the things, again, that I like teaching it for is to show just how much It does speak to the kind of concerns we have today. But I also get the students to look at Milton's early works and writings, which I think are very interesting for us and relevant to what we're talking about today. Because Milton was a young man who came from a middle-class family. His father was a self-made man who did very well as basically a kind of lawyer. Milton was his firstborn son, and the family was extremely proud of him because from the very start, he was clearly a child prodigy. And they expected great things from him. And his father invested a lot of money in an excellent education in high school, a good tutor. He went to Cambridge University. And after he finished university, he spent 5 years on his own studying before then going off to Europe for traveling for 2 years. So his family, you know, sort of backed him, were putting a lot of time and money into giving him an excellent education. And he actually didn't get a job until he was in his early 30s, at which point he became a teacher of young boys, not necessarily the most prestigious thing that you might do. So in a lot of ways, he was someone who had a life of luxury. But he was also, at the same time, under a lot of pressure, and I think pressures that many of you can relate to. There was a lot expected of him because he was so intelligent, so promising, and because his family had put a lot of money into him, allowing him to do these things. And all the time that he was studying, a lot of his friends and family were kind of saying things to him like, why aren't you getting a job? Why are you doing this? Why are you wasting your time studying these kinds of things which are not relevant to today's society? And so while he was doing all of this, he was also thinking a lot about the decision he was making and what it meant to him. And in his early poetry and in his letters, he defends this and talks about why it's important for him to be doing what he's doing. And he's thinking about the values, the things that he values in life, what matters to him, what's important to him, which ultimately was to become a poet. Although, in fact, he spent a lot of time in the middle part of his life involved in the politics of the time and public service. So I think that he's a good poet to read, especially at the stage that you're at, when you're under pressures and thinking also about the kind of choices that you're making. One of the decisions that you're making now, of course, is what kind of education you want, or two, what you want your education to do for you. And picking up on some of the things that Hudson was talking about, too, about the advantages of an arts degree and the kind of things that it offers to you. Everyone, of course, hopes that an education is going to prepare them for life after the BA, which means for most of us thinking about, you know, getting a job. But it can do so in different ways. If you study medicine, you become a doctor. If you study engineering, you become an engineer. If you study management, you manage things. And if you study business, you keep very busy. I don't know. I mean, they do something and they get a lot of money for it, but I've never quite figured out what it is. It's not the same kind of thing in arts, obviously. You know, unfortunately, you don't study philosophy and then become a paid philosopher. It's not that kind of one-to-one correspondence unless you become an academic. So, you know, one of the questions, of course, is what does an arts humanities degree for you do for you? Why study this? And this was the question, again, that Milton was thinking about a lot. And I'm not going to answer that for you because I think it's a question that all of you have to ask yourselves and think about during your studies, and in fact use your studies to think about what you want to get out of McGill, what you want to learn, what you need. But I will say a few things, though, again, you know, sort of picking up on what Hudson has said. This past winter, actually, I was running a series of talks called McGill for Humanities, which was a group of discussions about the importance of the humanities today and why we're studying it. And if you want to, there's a website that you can go to and you can see you can actually go and see the discussions or you can read some of the information that was posted on the website. And one of the reasons we had this discussion was because there was an assumption, seems to be out there, that people who study the humanities don't get jobs after graduation. This is utter nonsense. You do. I mean, you don't get a job in the way that an engineer gets a job. You don't fall into a job in the same kind of direct way. It doesn't happen as directly and not necessarily as quickly as in other areas. And part of the problem is that the statistics for graduation, or what happens to undergraduates in humanities after graduation, are still a little bit wobbly because people haven't been keeping them. But the evidence that we have so far is really interesting and very good. For example, and we have this on our website, a really astonishing number of CEOs in North America have undergraduate humanities degree. And we've got a list of these. I mean, I'm afraid it does include some rather shady characters like George W. Bush. But, you know, aside from that, you know, it's a pretty impressive list of characters who, you know, began studying history or philosophy or political science and then moved into other areas. And as Hudson was stressing, that the skills that you learn here, communication, interpretation, writing, are extremely valuable, that humanities graduates have reputations for being creative and flexible. But the other interesting thing, though, that came out of the discussion at the humanities is that the acquisition of those skills is not in itself the reason why students are studying the humanities or how they think about what they're doing. You know, one thing that's I think is true is that not everyone at your stage of life knows exactly what you want to do afterwards, you know, if you want to be a doctor or an engineer. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It took Milton a long time to figure out what he was going to do, and he's done pretty well over the centuries. He's got classes devoted to him still. It's not a bad thing to be able to be open to new possibilities, to new ideas and change. And indeed, these are some of the key things that are needed in jobs these days. And also, many people need to change or combine careers during their life. So being adaptable is very good. So I think these are also very important things to learn at university, to expand and develop as the foundation of a rich and interesting and good life. And that's, to me, one of the most important things that you can get out of your degree.
Thank you. So I'm a political scientist by training. My name is Philip Oxhorn, but I'm also the director of the Institute for the Study of International Development. And our institute has under its wing three programs that are all multidisciplinary. The biggest is International Development Studies, and I would be very surprised if a number of you weren't thinking about that major. The other two are African Studies and Latin American Studies. And, you know, the Institute was created with a kind of a double mandate that I think says a lot about what BA degrees can offer you. One is to make university research relevant to real-world problems. And that's what we're all about. And I think most of us would agree that would be nice, that we want to come down from our ivory tower, at least occasionally. And BA degrees are really good for that because why? Because they teach you, as you've heard, how to think critically, which also means having an open mind. It also gives you an awareness of other people whose situations are very different, oftentimes not as advantageous as your own. It allows you to appreciate and learn from those differences, to learn to collaborate, to learn to work with people. You also learn how to express your ideas in a clear, concise way, although sometimes it's not as concise as we would like when we get these long essays, but we're working on that. And at the same time, it tells you the importance of understanding processes in a way that allows you to defend and substantiate your argument. And so it doesn't matter if you're in the humanities or the social sciences. What we try and do is give you the basis for going out into the world and making a difference. The other mandate that we have, and this is particularly important for our students, is that our goal, however well we achieve it, is to create citizens of the world. To understand that Canada is one country among many, not necessarily the biggest, not necessarily the most powerful, but probably one of the fairest and most just societies. And a lot of other societies strive to be like Canada, and that's a responsibility, but it's also advantages that we take for granted. And so again, in our courses, what we try and do is emphasize to students what it means to be a citizen of the world, what it means to talk about shared values and shared experiences. One of the things that a BA degree has in, no matter what its discipline is, humanities or social sciences, is that human nature, that human connection, understanding human processes from a variety of different levels. And in fact, another reason that the Institute was created was to tackle complex problems, problems that don't have easy solutions, problems that are often more enduring than we would like. Now, how has that affected me, and what has that meant for me as a person? Well, my first project as an academic to be was to study opposition to a military regime in shantytowns in Chile. So what did that mean? It meant I had to learn Spanish, which I eventually did. It also meant that I had to relate to people who are very different from me. I'm a PhD student coming from the United States, because this is where I was born, going into a set of circumstances that was really in many ways the complete opposite of my life. And so for me, I learned an awful lot, and my willingness to learn made it easier for me to relate to these people who are in very, very different situations than mine. And that also is what it means to be a citizen of the world, and that's the kind of ideal that we set out for all of our students. Just as an anecdote, a couple of years ago, I got an email from a Chilean who was studying in Chile. He said he read something I wrote about this period, and he really liked it. He wanted to reach out to me. I said, well, that's really nice of you. And he said, yeah, it was in my history class. So I'm thinking history is really important. I didn't know I was old enough to be in a history class. But it just shows you that in contexts that are so different from today's, we can still learn a lot. In Chile in the 80s, to date myself, was very, very different than Chile today, a very poor economy compared to a very thriving economy. Yet the lessons to be learned are still there. The last example from my own work that I'll give you is something more recent that I'm working on. It's a project to literally make a better potato, a super papa in Spanish. And the idea here is to get a potato that is nutritious and that needs less herbicides and insecticides. And the project grew out of a request by a small indigenous community in Colombia saying, look, we're worried about our kids because we're putting so much fertilizer, so many pesticides, so many herbicides. We are afraid for their health. So we have a multidisciplinary team, agronomists, nutritionists, geneticists, and people like me, policymakers, social scientists, trying to design the super papa. Now, I obviously have nothing to do with the actual design of the potato. And what is my role there? Well, one role is to help recover traditional diets. Because the first thing you find is that when you go to poor communities anywhere in the world, for a variety of reasons, some by necessity, some for lack of education, people don't eat well. But in indigenous communities in the Andes, they used to eat a lot better. And so the idea is to retrieve and recuperate this rich history, not only because it's rich in and of itself, but because people will live longer and healthier lives. The other is the empowerment of women, because women in these societies are often relegated to the sidelines, even though they're the ones that do the cooking, they're the ones that are going to use the super papa to help make their lives better. And finally, and for the community at least, my most important role, aside from helping them translate this into effective policies, is to make sure that the potato that the hard scientists come up with is one people want to eat. Because you forget, it could be the best potato in the world, but if it doesn't look right, if it's too big, too small, the wrong color, the wrong texture, no one will touch it. And if no one accepts it, then a lot of good the project is. And the last thing I want to say is that point, too, is that the social sciences and humanities have a vital role to play in helping make the technologically and scientifically possible, viable, and happen. Because without politics, without understanding human and social relations, it's not going to go anywhere. My colleagues, who I have tremendous respect for, can come up with the best potato in the world, and hopefully they did, but if no one's eating it, a lot of good it does. So the whole point here is it's what you learn is not only the concrete, it's how you learn, and the processes of learning, which honestly is the best preparation for whatever you might want to do once you leave McGill. So enjoy your experience here.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lucy Lockamy, Associate Dean. But I'm also a researcher and an associate professor in the School of Social Work. So I'm going to speak to you from my School of Social Work position first. Have you ever come across a child with a disability? What image comes to mind? A wheelchair zipping through the hallways at school, an awkward walk, slurred speech, funny glasses, someone who doesn't quite make eye contact with you in a way that you recognize, someone who stands too close, talks too loud, and doesn't get it when you want to end the conversation. Yes, these are all examples of childhood disabilities. In fact, up to 9% of Canadian children have some sort of disability that ranges from ones that are considered quite invisible and mild in complexity to ones that involve multiple body systems. In fact, some of you sitting here might have one, a learning disability perhaps. They really affects the how people can hear and listen and speak and express themselves in a manner that what we call is considered neurotypical. My interest in kids with disabilities wasn't planned. I stumbled, like most things in life, I stumbled across this field of study as an undergraduate student in an honors sociology program at another university in Canada. I was working as a researcher. I was fortunate enough to actually get to know a professor and begin to work with him as a research assistant. And the project that we were working on was at the Hospital for Sick Children. We were trying to answer a question which remain, to this day, in fact, remains unanswered. But my preparation in sociology taught me a lot of things. It taught me about how to learn, about how knowledge is acquired. That is, how is it that we know what we know? How identity, cultural identity, gender identity, national identity is constructed? And how new social institutions emerge to replace ones that are no longer working or that are disintegrating? This completely indulgent immersion into an intellectual reflection on how society works led me to my mentor, and who introduced me in turn to this field of social work. So I actually did go on after an honors in sociology to complete a master's degree in social work, and I got a job, a real job, at the Hospital for Sick Children, where I worked for 17 years. I worked with kids with cystic fibrosis who were, it's a terminal degenerative condition, and I learned a lot about them, about life and about dying. I then switched gears into neurology, where I was introduced to kids with various levels of neurological impairment. And I was really struck by the fact that these kids and their families don't just have tragic lives, that there was a complexity to their life that surely did involve despair and pain, but it also involved hope. So I went back many years later to do my PhD, and now I'm documenting this phenomenon of this distress and despair, as well as resilience and hope. And what I've found through my own research is, yes, the separation and divorce rates among these families are twice as high, or almost twice as high as they are in families who don't have kids with neurological impairments, that their parents are more likely to have physical health issues themselves, as well as mental health issues, and that these families are economically compromised, so much so that sometimes they have to give up their kids because they can't care for them themselves. And I continue to document this more tragic side or despairing side of their lives, I'm also documenting their resilience and hope, which brings me to the question of social justice at that angle of my work. Whose responsibility is it to ensure that these children achieve their potential and that they have access to and can benefit from the discoveries and innovations that prolong and enhance their life, that their quality of life or that their family's quality of life is adequate or even better, as good as those who are neurotypical? My hope as a researcher is that by documenting these disparities, these gaps, and these inequalities, that this will provide an evidence needed for advocacy work. It is, I believe, part of our social contract, back to sociology, to ensure that the citizens of our society have access to adequate housing, adequate income to make it through to the end of the month, and that they physically can get to where they need to go, and that they are engaged, as Professor Oxhorn said, as full citizens. So at this point, I guess I'm just going to switch my hat a little bit and say that this is an example of how getting an arts degree can lead then to a professional degree, but there are two other professional programs in the Faculty of Arts. One is in industrial relations, and another one is in information science. It's a newcomer to the Faculty of Arts, and it's a graduate degree. So in my case, it certainly taught me to think critically about where children with disabilities are situated in the social world, what our obligation is at an individual level and a societal level. And I'm very excited for you to be on the cusp of this very same journey. Êtes-vous prêt?
Thank you, professors. So we'll now do a short question and answer session. If you guys have any questions, put up your hand and shout them out. Okay, I'm a little shy. Well, if I can just add to what the panel was just speaking about, I'm just going to paraphrase a quote from a Toronto Star columnist who was defending the value of an arts education against a more technical degree such as engineering. And what she said, and I found it very, very moving, was, "Engineers will show us how to get to the future, but the things you learn in a BA degree are going to be what makes it worthwhile to get there." And I think that really speaks to what these professors were just talking about. So if you want to put your hands together again for the panel. And next up, we have another panel. This one is going to be of students. And they're going to be talking about some of the more out-of-classroom experiences you can have here at McGill. So I can introduce them. Maybe they can talk a little bit more about what they've done. But we have Anna, who did a field study in Panama. We have Ariel, who did a study away, just returned actually from Singapore just a day or two ago. We have Antoine, who's speaking from the Arts Internship Office about what their office does. And we have Renaud from the art, who has done an Arts Research Internship Award, which is a great program, and he's going to be speaking a little bit about his experience. So, if the panelists are ready.
Hey, hello. I suppose I'm speaking first. My name is Ariel Shapiro, and I am just finishing my second year in political science here at McGill. And as you said, I was on exchange in Singapore, and I just got back a day and a half ago, so if I fall asleep on the podium, I'm sorry. This is also the coldest weather I've experienced since January, so it's quite a culture shock. Like many of you, I'm from Montreal. I lived here my whole life. I went to high school in Montreal West, so this was my first time ever living for a significant period of time outside of Montreal, and that in and of itself was a tremendous experience. So I'd just like to talk to you a little bit about what an exchange is. What it is that you do a semester of your time at McGill at another institution somewhere else in the world. McGill has a long list of partner schools with which it has an agreement. So you go to one of those schools, it means you only pay McGill tuition, which is pretty nice. And then you study there for a semester, and it counts for your degree. So I studied at the National University of Singapore, which is a McGill partner school. I decided to go to that school because I really wanted to study in Asia, somewhere I wanted to learn more about, but it's also a country that speaks English, very modern, very developed, so I thought it was the best of both worlds, and it really was. I was there studying from January until May, and then after my exams, I traveled around Southeast Asia. I went to pretty much all the countries in the region. I have like 10 currencies in my wallet now. So it was really a fantastic opportunity. Made me think a lot about home as well. You know, here in Montreal, we have two languages. In Singapore, they have four, and they manage it quite well most of the time. So again, just some little insights you pick up. So I'd like to talk to you about the two aspects of an exchange and why I would really recommend it. There's the academic side, and then there's the non-academic side. Academically, I took courses just like, you know, courses you would take here, but just with a different spin, a different twist, which makes it such an interesting thing to have done. For example, I took a course in Japanese history in Singapore, but my professor was Japanese, and Singapore was conquered by Japan during the Second World War, for example. So it's I took Japanese history at McGill as well, and it was an excellent course, but taking it there with a professor who's from there and, you know, look out the window, this place was conquered by Japan, such an interesting way of learning it that, you know, you don't really have here at McGill, in a different way. Similarly, I took a course in civil-military relations, and we learned about the army and Thailand and politics. So then when the coup d'etat happened in Thailand, I actually felt like I understood what was going on. And, of course, my cultural trips to the beach in Thailand helped me understand as well. So academically fantastic experience, but then there's also the non-academic side of an exchange. You get to travel, both in Europe and in Asia. Budget airlines are really, really cheap, so you can travel all over the place on the weekend. In one day, I went from Laos, one of the least developed countries in the world, to Hong Kong, which is by any measure more developed than Canada. So just an amazing, amazing experience to be able to see all these places on the weekends and on holidays. You get to meet people, of course. I celebrated Chinese New Year in Singapore, something I'd never done before. It was an incredible experience. You meet people from Europe, Australia, South America, maybe even down the street in Montreal. You never met them before. I'm just absolutely amazing to make friends and work with people from all over the world. And, of course, you will have a lot of fun. A rooftop bar on a skyscraper in Singapore is more fun than Crescent Street, I can guarantee it. It's just an incredible experience that you somehow you can't get in Montreal. So if I could just conclude with two pieces of advice to any of you who are considering an exchange, which I would, again, very strongly recommend, is to start early. It's not difficult to make it happen, but you have to make it happen on your own. You have to go to the website, do the research, find out which school you want to go to. Do they have courses in language that you speak? Does it work with your not only arts, but with political science or philosophy or history, whatever it is you're studying? You really have to start early. Make it happen by doing research. It's not impossible, but you have to make it happen on your own. So start doing that. Start thinking about it if it's something you want to do. And, of course, know what you want out of the exchange. It's only as fun as you make it. So if you want to go, are you a city person? Are you a country person? Do you want to go to Europe? Do you want to go to Asia? It all depends on you. So just make sure you have the time to think about what it is you want. If you have any questions, ask me later. And if you have any specific questions about Singapore, I'll be happy to talk to you. And I will be happy to pass the microphone on to my colleague over here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna, and I just graduated from my Bachelor of Arts. And I just also came back from Panama, where I did a field study semester. So a field study semester is a little bit different than an exchange, where he went to study at the University of Singapore. And the field study semester at McGill is something organized by McGill with McGill professors in another country. There's a field study semester in Panama for the winter semester. There's another one in Barbados. They have it in the fall and the summer as well. And in Africa, where they travel in different countries in Africa. I don't know exactly which countries. But I went to the one in Panama, which was the highlight of my 4 years here, which have been also amazing. I really, really recommend anyone if you can have an experience like this. I went specifically for a field study semester because I love studying in the field. It's very, very different from, as you might imagine, studying in a classroom. You're learning by doing. You're learning without even noticing. For some people in the program, they had never been to the tropics before, so it's like studying a completely different ecosystem with a different language, a different culture that they had never seen before. I'm from Mexico, so that wasn't maybe as a new experience, but for my friends who didn't even speak Spanish, field study semester in Panama means also gaining the new language skills, learning Spanish. It's really well organized. It's really amazing. We went to all the whole provinces of Panama. You get to travel so much, and you get to meet so many researchers doing realize what research is on the field. I study environment, so it was very interesting. I study environment from the Faculty of Arts, so it was really interesting for me to see what are the real implications for conservation related to social complexities. We went to an indigenous village. We stayed there for 5 days and did some conservation work with them regarding their corals. So we were like snorkeling, but that was our lab exercise, basically. We took treks in the cloud forest, but at the same time, our teacher was telling us, about the ecosystem and different plants that are there. You also get to do an internship with a local organization. That's a key aspect of the program. It's really amazing. So you get to be in pairs with the other students, and you're allocated with a local organization, and you get to do an internship, so 6 credits. So basically, a field study semester was awesome because I got credits for my bachelor degree. I got to travel all around Panama, and after in Costa Rica, I was there with a course group of students, 26. And you'll see that at McGill, you might find yourself in big classrooms always. Like, sometimes it's hard to approach or like have a core group of friends. But here you're living, traveling, studying with 26 students of McGill, like-minded, and it's totally awesome. So I think that's about it. That's what I wanted to say. And also other opportunities for after. So this field study semester is a partnership between McGill and the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, which is in Panama. And some of my friends now are now actually doing their internships there, which is an awesome opportunity if you want to do research after in a neotropical environment. That's about it. And also, some of my friends are actually now interested in doing their masters in the neotropical environments because they want to stay in the tropics. Yeah. Well, that's about it. Thank you.
So, hi, everyone. I hope you hear me now. I'm Antoine Alavo. I actually graduated with honors in a double major, political science and international development studies, and I'm now the arts internship office coordinator. So in my second year, I did an internship in Peru in a shanty town called San Juan de Lurigancho, and I was able to obtain credit as well as get an award to support my internship. So for me, an internship was a chance to kind of enhance my degree and take my classroom experience a bit further. It all started actually in the situation you're in right after CGEP. I decided to take the summer and travel. I went to Peru, and I had a friend who was already in university. He introduced me to his project, which was a community education project in that shanty town. I really fell in love with what they were doing, the approach of community education, and the country itself. So when I got back to McGill, it kind of inspired me to declare my major in international development studies. I practiced my Spanish, I took all the classes, I learned more about community education, and in my second year, I had a really big project in mind. I wanted to go back and actually bring McGill med school students in order to set up a clinic and stay for about 3 months to do my internship with the same organization I had met 2 years before. And because of the help of the Arts Internship Office, I was able to accomplish all of that. So let's go and start with first things. What is an internship? You must have read about it. You must have heard something. Some of you may think, oh, I'm just going to do photocopies and bring coffee to my boss. It's much more than that. Actually, for us, it's a work placement that's about 2 to 3 months, and it's in your field of study. And so basically, for me, it's like the best summer job ever. Okay. What it can bring to your degree is allow you to apply what you've learned. You're going to learn a lot in class, some theoretical. It gives you a chance to see how it is in the real world. Apply it to your field of study and kind of contribute what you've learned to the organization you'll be working with. It's also a chance to test out for grad school, for your future job. Do I really want to work in economics? Would I be good as a communication specialist? Well, when you do an internship, you get to experience it firsthand and make a decision afterwards when you come back. And finally, for a lot of people, it's kind of a chance to live your dream. Either go to the country of your dreams or work for an organization that you never thought possible, like the UN. So trust me, it's the right time to do it is really your undergrad degree. I remember I would do my exams and take the plane 2 days later, do 3 months, and come back, register for my classes, and get started the next semester. And you're never going to have that chance to kind of focus on what you want to do in your internship as much as when you're an undergrad student. When you finish and you graduate, most people focus on their job or their grad school application, so it's the right time to do it, and second year is perfect for that. We offer a wide range of internship opportunities for all sorts of degrees. I'll just give you some examples of students. We have some people work in museums like the Guggenheim in New York. I had a student who's working for Vice Magazine in publishing in Sweden. And we recently had students in the UN World Food Program in Panama. One of your partners that did the field studies is actually still interning there right now. So the Arts Internship Office is really there to help you find an internship, support the project you already have in mind, and get ready and prepare beforehand. You're going to have some workshops, cultural sensitivity training, how to plan your visas, your budget, and they're going to allow you and kind of encourage you to apply for an award. The award was extremely useful during my internship. The financial support I got was, it kind of allowed me to just focus on the internship instead of thinking of the costs, how am I going to pay for my lodging and my food. I was able to just give myself 100% to the work. And when you come back, there's a chance to get credit. So I actually work with Professor Oxhorn, who was just speaking to you right beforehand.
And, you know, I learned so much during my internship about community organization, education, but you're so busy every day. I worked from 6 a.m. to about 6 p.m. I was busy with presentations, traveling. So when you come back, you've learned so much, but you're already getting started with classes, and you kind of want to talk about it and focus more on what you just learned. So getting credit was a chance to get close to a professor. I had a class. It was just me and the professor. I was able to work on research about Peru, about that shantytown community, really what I was interested in, and it was very specific. And it really helped me because I took that thesis subject to my graduate studies later. So I gained a lot of skills, languages, field work, and it allowed me to apply what I learned in class. The awards really allowed me to kind of be free and focus on what I wanted to do. So I just want to invite you all to get started early, as mentioned. We have our office on the third floor of Leacock. You can come and visit us. We'll show you some opportunities. If you have a project in mind, we can help you get there. We have an annual event where you can hear from many students that just got back from their internship. And I just wanted to let you know that there is fieldwork internships with organizations, but there's also another type, which is actually research internships, and that's what the panel is going to be talking about.
Hello, everybody. First of all, congratulations for getting into McGill. It's going to be an amazing experience. So my name is Renaud. I was a student in political science and international development, graduated 2 days ago. Thank you. It was hard, but I did it. So I remember in first year, you know, being very anxious about coming to McGill, coming from France. Being one of the top universities in the world, there's a lot of expectations to fulfill. In my very first year, I did an internship in Ghana in a small community called Agbuzume Klikor, which is right next to Togo. And I did my first research there, and it was about the impact of preschool on the social and educational development of Ghanaian children. I got credit for this research, and it was really interesting to be on the field. When I came back, I participated to the research showcase with the Arts Undergraduate Research Event, which allowed me to have a lot of feedback from students, from the staff, and from the professors at McGill. I realized that there were other opportunities to continue research as an undergraduate student. So then the second year, I applied to AREA, which is the Arts Research Internship Award, coordinated with the AIO. I work with two professors, and I was financially supported through an award, which cover the cost of living and the cost of traveling, which is pretty sweet. So this AREA program helped me to do a higher level of research, you know, for 2 or 3 months on the field again. It's also an opportunity to contribute to professors' ongoing projects and research. So the AIO prepared me to do this project with a lot of workshops, and one of them is my arts library research. And basically, it is an intensive half-day workshop to learn about specific research software and how to do a works cited paper and find books in the library. And trust me, you really want to find books in the library, and it's really hard because it's really big. And so this workshop allowed me to, you know, write better papers, have better grade, and I'm really grateful for the to the AIO for that. So my project was a little bit special because I went to Ghana with two of my profs. It was an economic research, and it was an amazing experience, and it definitely gives you an idea of the broad academical sphere that we're not all aware of when, you know, you start at McGill. My research was really flexible, but I still had a lot of responsibilities. It's an opportunity to apply the theories that you learn in class to do research on the field. And it was really great to have a research mentor also. So working close with two professors opens new opportunity for students. It is great, you know, when you're on the field, but it is also great when you come back to McGill. Because it gives you an experience on the field to put on your resume, but it also gives you, you know, another idea of what you want to do for graduate school and recommendation letters after working with profs. So it's really great. To conclude, I never thought that I would do research like I did 2 summers in Ghana, you know. And I really encourage you to get started right now. Don't wait until, you know, master or PhD to start your research. Academic research is an amazing opportunity for undergraduate like you. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, panelists. Next, we have a speech from our very own Dean of Arts, Professor Christopher Manfredi.
I wouldn't exactly call it a speech because you have to be somewhere else at 12:30. Renaud, if you graduated 2 days ago in Political Science and International Development Studies, you had a memorable convocation indeed.
I was not bored.
We had a rather exciting time Tuesday afternoon. Anyway, I just want to say welcome to the Faculty of Arts. Thank you for coming to McGill, and thank you for coming to the McGill Faculty of Arts. It may seem like an imposing, large place, and it is a large, diverse faculty. 15 departments, now 2 professional schools, 4 interdisciplinary institutes. But as you've heard, there's lots of opportunities for stretching yourself both academically and non-academically, and I'd encourage you to take advantage of all of those opportunities. In your first years, you may see large classes, but in fact, the average class size in the Faculty of Arts is around 55. There are lots of small classes available to you, lots of opportunities for individualized instruction, and you should take advantage of all of those opportunities as well. It's a great faculty for extracurricular activities, for getting involved with the Arts Undergraduate Society. You, I'm sure, will have memorized Bar des Arts, will become a phrase that will be ingrained, imprinted in your mind over your 3 or perhaps 4 years at McGill, and you should take advantage of that as well. And before I let you go, are there any tennis fans in the audience? So just to let you know if you are, unfortunately, Eugenie Bouchard lost in the French semifinals to Maria Sharapova, but it took 3 sets, so that's a pretty good result. At any rate, enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your time to McGill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dean. And sorry if you can hold on. We actually just have a couple more presentations. Just one more. We're just going to have a short little speech from Lola Beraldi. She's the incoming VP External of the Arts Undergraduate Society, and she's going to explain what we do.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to McGill. My name is Lola. I'm currently the Vice President External for the Arts Undergraduate Society. I will be entering my 3rd year at McGill come September, and I'm studying history, political science, and communication studies. And I'm here to talk a bit about the AUS, l'Association étudiante de la Faculté des Arts, and what we do for you and what you can do for us. So basically, the Arts Undergraduate Society is a student association. Our purpose can be summed up in kind of 3 words, representation, services, and events. We represent all students pursuing an undergraduate degree in arts or in arts and science. We represent you to the Student Society of McGill University, which is a separate council. We represent you to the McGill administration, to the Faculty of Arts, and to the Government of Quebec. So it's a lot of responsibility for us. And we provide services in order to enhance your life on campus, your life at university, and we organize events. It's a really wide diversity of events. It ranges from Arts Frosh, which I'm sure you're all very excited about, to departmental advising, or we have some fine arts events going on in the lounge and things like that. So we're located in the basement of Leacock, which you will become very familiar with, especially if you're entering first year. That's where all your big first year classes will be. So if you just come down to the basement, we have the Arts Lounge, and it's a space for you where you can relax, you can study, you can even play pool. We have a pool table. There's a computer lab, and we also have a lot of services going on in the lounge. So, for example, we have an essay center where you can bring in your essays and have tutors look over them for you and help you out with it. We also have, as the dean mentioned, BDA, which you will all become very familiar with every Thursday. The council takes place every 2 weeks, and it's basically where all the big decisions are made. And you're all welcome to attend. You can sit in the gallery and kind of see what we're talking about, see what's going on at council. It's made up of representatives from every department in arts, as well as your 7 AUS executives, arts representatives, and arts senators. So yeah, I'm not going to go into council too much, but we have a lot of committees that you can take part in, and all you have to do is kind of take that little step to be informed when September rolls around. We have a listserv that goes out every week, and a lot of opportunities will be popping up, and so yeah, it's a good time. And then lastly, yeah, these are your AUS execs. There are seven of us. We have the internal, finance, president, academic, communications, social, and external, which is me. I'm not going to go into every portfolio, but all of them have a lot of different opportunities for you to get involved, a different mission in order to help you out. So, for example, my main job is to link the Arts Undergraduate Society with everything that lies beyond it. So, for instance, community engagement in Montreal or career prospects or other associations and organizations on campus. We all have office hours every week. They will be advertised. So what we would love from you is for you to come chat with us and tell us how we can help you. And if you're a bit overwhelmed in your first few weeks, because it's a bit overwhelming, we're a presence that you can come to on campus, and we can provide resources for you and let you know where you can get involved and based on what your interests are. And yeah, if there's anything you want to add. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think we'll last run, but if you have any questions about the AUS, I'd be happy to answer them. And, yeah, thanks again for coming. I believe there's a lunch in the Brown Building waiting for you guys. Just follow from the first year office in the red shirt. But thank you again for coming to the faculty over at CSI, and good luck in your studies.